Welcome to the Princeton LaxCast. I am Jerry Price, and I am here with Princeton head men's lacrosse coach Matt Madelon. And coach, welcome.
Happy to be back.
So a tough one last Saturday, a 9-8 loss at Rutgers. That game was 9-3 in the second quarter. Shut Rutgers out for 32 minutes to end the game, but just couldn't get the last one to fall. And, not the performance you wanted after the big win over Navy. And what are you thinking when you got to the field, and what are you thinking when you left the field?
You know what? It was really disappointing. We're all pretty upset about the loss, as we're upset about any loss. But, you know, that one in particular, we didn't get off the bus well. We put ourselves behind too quickly, too large of a gap to make up. I thought down the stretch, we made some adjustments, both personnel-wise and system-wise, and it was able to help us, and we were able to climb back. And then, you know, when we had our last second opportunity, we just didn't capitalize in the moment. Very difficult loss. And to answer your question, we got to the field. I mean, it was our third game in 7 days, so we knew fatigue would play a little bit of a factor, but I didn't think it would affect the overall energy of our organization. And we just came out a little flat, and they did a good job jumping on us, and they didn't do anything we weren't expecting. Just a couple good breaks, a couple hustle plays went their way, and they were able to just kind of build a little bit of a cushion.
You could take some stuff away from that game. You didn't give up. You turned a 9-3 game into a 9-8 game and had a chance at the end to win it. Is that of any consolation?
It always is.
I mean, to tie it, not win it.
Yeah, it always is. I mean, look, you want your guys to continue to battle no matter what the score is, no matter what the scenario is. And our guys did just that. And, our message at halftime was, make sure the right team comes out of this locker room and have the right focus and discipline and make sure we stick to our systems and trust the systems and get back and make one play at a time. And they did that, just unfortunately too little too late.
Was there anybody in that game that stood out as playing well?
We made a goalie change at half. Eric Peters went in. He did a nice job kind of standing tall in the cage. Gave us a little spark defensively. Probably got the guys playing a little harder for him.
Which often happens when you make a goalie
absolutely. Change. That's a lot of the it's a lot of the reason, or that's one of the reasons why coaches do it. It's one of the reasons why I do it. It wasn't necessarily due to our goalie's performance. It was more or less just, D needed a spark, team needed a spark. So we're able to make a change. Peters did a nice job in the cage. And then down the stretch, we just got to make little play after little play.
So this week it's Penn, the Ivy opener, and it's huge. If you go back the last 3 years, if you've beaten Penn, you've made the Ivy tournament. If you've lost to Penn, you haven't. And, it's somewhat, in some ways, as simple as that. It's not a league where losing your first game is desirable, that you need to, play from ahead, not try to play catch up. Last year, dug a big hole and came close to getting out of it, but need some help at the end that you don't want to have to need from other people. So what's the difference between a game week where there's an Ivy League game and where there's, just another non-league game?
Our guys do a really good job of getting excited for every game. I think there's always a little more excitement around the Ivy games, knowing what's on the line. But really, it's about pride. I mean, this is a big game for us. This is a game for us to get back in the W column, to get back to playing better lacrosse, make sure we come out on fire. And really just, do a good job executing our game plan. I think we're getting better every week. We just got to get playing our best across at the right time, and that's coming soon.
So let's talk about Michael Sowers first. Michael, so there are 6 players in Princeton men's lacrosse history who have reached 200 career points. Can you name them, by the way?
I can, but not on the spot.
Kevin Lowe, Ryan Boyle, John Hess, Jesse Hubbard, Mike McDonald, and Tom Shriver. That's the 200-point club. And I looked up how many games it took each one of them to get there. And if you think about the caliber of player that we're talking about to get to 200 points at Princeton, you're talking about the best of the best who've ever played here. Hall of Fame guys, guys who will be in the Hall of Fame, national champion level guys, pro guys, just the best of the best who's played here. And so you have Lowe did it the fastest, 49 games. Took him 49 games to get to 200.
It's incredible.
Boyle was next, and he did it in his 52nd game. And then everybody else was either 55 or 56 games to get to 200 points. Michael Sowers has 197 points in 33 games.
Yeah, it's really remarkable. I mean, that's an incredible pace.
I mean, it's just extraordinary because it's not like, you're not comparing him to average players. You're comparing him to the best of the best. And, he's put up numbers that are extraordinary. And, so when I look at numbers like that, I think to myself, is he simply on another level from everybody else, or is some of this how the game has changed, or you know, his ability to feed and to score himself, or what, you know? But I'm trying to figure out why he's obliterating all.
I think it's honestly, it's probably a really nice blend of all of them. You know, the game's absolutely changed. You know, so. You know, maybe that helps him, and to say how it changed and how it helps him, you know, I'm not sure right now. But, you know, and then the scenarios, you know, depending on the teams those guys played in and the systems they played within, you know, it matters how much they touch the ball, when they touch the ball within the offensive sets, how and when they're scoring their goals. Are they scoring them unassisted? Or are they scoring them assisted in terms of points? So there's a lot to go into it. Michael's obviously a very special player.
It's amazing when you think of that. Like Kevin Lowe is in the U.S. Lacrosse Hall of Fame. He's the all-time leading scorer at Princeton. And in 25 years, nobody has caught his record. And really, Boyle's the only guy who's come even remotely close. And Lowe has 247 points. Boyle has 232. So he didn't get that close to him. And yet, it took him 49 games to get to 200. It's going to take Michael, you know, if he doesn't get 34, it'll be 35 or something like that.
Sure, yeah. We hope Don on Saturday.
Well, that's yeah. Into our next question. So last year, if you remember the game against Penn, Penn controlled it from the start. And I have to say that of all of the games that Michael has played here, all 33 of those games, the guy who did the best job of defending him is the guy he's about to go up against again.
Sure. Again, I think, you know, it depends. You know, I can't remember exactly what offensive system we were running in that game and how we were using Michael. You know, what's interesting is we see, you know, different defenses. Michael and our offense has done a very good job of just, adjusting and accommodating and really playing to each other's strengths. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. I think the Ivanchuk kid, he's a Darien guy where I grew up. So, you know, I've got to see the young guy grow up and play, and he's a heck of an athlete and a good defenseman, and he continues to do a good job week in and week out. It'll be a great battle.
It was. So 2 years ago, Michael had 9 points against Penn, and last year he had a goal. No goals, 3 assists, so he didn't get shut out. But, you know, he got taken out of what he normally does, and he got taken out of it in a way that, you know, was basically the one guy who won the one-on-one matchup with him. And, you know, that has an effect on a team when, you know, something happens that doesn't ordinarily happen. Are there psychological carryovers to that? I mean, you know, there's historical precedence, and we're going to see this again later in the season against Cornell if Bond guards Teat after what happened last year. You know, famously, Damian Davis guarded Mikey Powell and shut him out in the regular season, and Mikey Powell came back with 4 goals and 5 assists in the NCAA tournament game. So, you know, some guys just get into other guys' heads, and then other guys, you know, they get pissed and they come back with a huge game afterwards. You know, is there any way to tell what happens there?
I mean, Michael's a pretty impressive player in the sense that he's not going to let any carryover, you know, from last year, last game, whatever it may be. He's just going to constantly learn and get better, and he'll watch the tape of the matchup. And if that's his matchup again this year, which we anticipate it being, you know, I'm sure I'll have him figured out, or at least, you know, be able to attack properly within the framework of our offense. But now some of those matchups are incredible, and it's, you know, with the shot clocks, with the shot clock era happening right now, you know, you can put defensemen more on an island a little bit now than maybe you could in the past. So yeah, it'll be interesting. I think you can see a lot more of that, and maybe, you know, as our game grows and continues to understand the shot clock era, you'll maybe really see some true attack defense matchups pitted against each other for years to come.
And it was no fluke. I mean, Ivanchuk was first team All Ivy League last year. And
a very nice player. Yeah.
Started every game so far this year. Penn is off to an interesting start. 3-3. 1-goal losses to Maryland and Penn State, and a tougher loss to Duke. But still, they're sitting here sort of like Princeton saying, you know, we are a possession or two away from being 5-1 as opposed to 2-3. I'm sorry. They're 2-3. They were 0-3, and then they swept the 2 games last weekend in the Philly lacrosse event. But yeah, I mean, they're similarly to Princeton sitting here saying, We're pretty close to being, you know, top 10 and 4-1, and those are dangerous teams, just like Princeton is.
Sure, I'd imagine their coaching staff, a lot like ours, is saying, hey, let's clean up the mistakes, and, you know, we're in every one of these games, and if down the stretch we can make the right plays and keep playing better lacrosse, you know, we're a program and we're teams that continue to get better. So I'd imagine very similar.
And Penn is a strong face-off team, winning nearly 60%. Princeton has faced off very well this year as well, especially getting strong wing play. And, you know, no surprises that that's going to be a part of the game that goes a long way to determining the outcome.
Sure. I think as we get into all Ivy League play, as you get into all conference play, you know, some of these face-off guys, you know, that for our opposing teams do a really nice job. It'll be a focus of ours as it is every week. But, yeah, Penn's got a good one.
So when you pay attention to college lacrosse as the season starts to unfold, now you're into the Ivy League portion of the season. Have you been paying close attention to how these teams have been doing out of the league? Cornell obviously doing well, Yale doing well, Brown with the overtime loss to Virginia. Harvard has had some moments where they've looked really good. Obviously, Penn is close to you know being a top 10 team. What do you see?
I mean, I think our league's great. You know, we always stand on the platform that one of the strongest leagues in Division I lacrosse. I think that, you know, it proved itself last year with Yale coming out on top, but Cornell also making a good late run. I think there are a lot of extremely competitive teams, a lot of great coaching staffs, a lot of great players. It's always been kind of the league of the attackmen in the years past. So it's been really impressive. It's good to see our guy. It's good to see our in-league teams doing well out of conference. So it only makes our conference stronger.
Yeah, you know, I was watching the Brown Virginia game, and you know, it was very similar to the Princeton Virginia game, where just a little bit here and there, and it makes such a huge difference. And then you're left after the fact saying to yourself, you know, okay, we lost to Virginia, and the goalie made 24 saves, and now he's not even playing anymore. And Brown is coming away from that game saying, you know, we had it, we let it get away with some late goals, and we had some opportunities that we didn't take advantage of. And the difference between the win and the loss is very slim, but the impact of the win and the loss is huge in terms of records and things like that. And it's the difference between being, you know, ranked in the top 10, top 5, or just trying to get into the top 20. But now that you're in the Ivy League season, none of that really matters in terms of how you get into the postseason. So you got to be in the Ivy tournament, and that's not going to be an easy thing for any of these seven teams.
No, it's going to be a great battle. I mean, it's in the years past, it's shaken up to be just that. We anticipate, you know, nothing different.
So the game against, and I heard a couple of people say this, that it's hard to play in a giant empty football stadium if you're not used to it. So that was what Rutgers was. It was what Navy was to a certain extent. So you know, you can't say, well, we put up 19 goals against Navy, we couldn't put up 8 against Rutgers, you can't really blame the stadium. But again, going to play in another huge, you know, mostly empty football stadium, 65,000 seat Franklin Field, which will have, you know, supposed to be a nice day. Let's say there's 2,000 people there. It's still going to look empty. What is that like for a team that doesn't play in a big football stadium, doesn't practice in a big football stadium? Does it matter at all?
You know what? I actually don't think it does. I think, you know, the only time it matters is when there are 25,000 people in there. And, you know, can your guys communicate and execute with a little bit of a crowd noise and a little bit of adversity there? But otherwise, no. I mean, we hope to take the field and focus on the play right in front of you, and you know that shouldn't matter where you're playing.
So always, when you walk into Franklin Field, or at least when I walk into Franklin Field, I think of a lot of things. I think of intramural softball that we used to play on Franklin Field and intramural flag football.
Nice.
Even co-ed intramural flag football, and you had to have a woman as your quarterback, and if you could find a woman who could throw, you had a big advantage, and we had a woman who on my
floor.
It's
an incredible rule.
Yeah. And then, but on a more serious note, for me, it always takes me back to the 1992 Final Four. It's where Princeton won the first of its 6 NCAA championships. 1992 Memorial Day defeated Syracuse 10-9 and Andy Moe's goal in the second overtime. The second one was the 1994 NCAA championship. And then next weekend, home against Yale, the current defending NCAA champ, and honoring the 94 team. And you know, what's that like, bringing all those guys back?
Oh, it's very cool for the program. I mean, it's also
the 25th anniversary thing at halftime of the NCAA championship game.
Absolutely. I mean, it's such an incredible honor for those guys. You know, it's what's remarkable about Princeton, and it continues to amaze me, is how good of a job these guys do at staying connected with one another and supporting the program. So for us to be able to kind of repay them with a small tribute, which they've done a heck of a lot more for our program than we could ever repay them for, but it'll be an incredible opportunity to show our support and, you know, our pride in that group.
Is that too long ago for your current players to take anything away from?
No, I think they're just really proud to be part of this program, and they're proud of the guys that came before them, and, you know, they understand about upholding the tradition and you know, the honor it is to play for Princeton. But, no, I think our guys kind of want to they want to pave their own path. You know, they want to get out there, and they want to accomplish great things themselves. So I think they're proud that those folks came before them, but they don't take anything for granted.
And then one last thing is I thought having the Navy game for the quick turnaround after the Hopkins game was a good thing because you didn't have to sit on that for a week, but now you've had to sit on this Rutgers game. Now it's midweek. By the time you get to Franklin Field, it'll be 7 days. What, you know, what's that like? I mean,
just the ebbs and flow of a season. I mean, really, I think coming away with 3 games in 7 days, you know, you kind of see what kind of shape your guys are in. You see what kind of decisions you make when you're fatigued. You know, I think being able to get a little rested, you know, it's midterm week for us, so our guys can knock out some exams. You know, it's actually nice that we don't have a midweek game. You know, just be able to get back to work on the practice field and really just shore some things up. And so it's actually been a really nice week for us.
So face off at Franklin Field Saturday is 3:30. It's the second game of a doubleheader. The first game is Penn and Duke, Princeton Penn Men, 3:30 face off, and then it starts after that, the next 3 games in basically 7 or 8 days, when it'll be Yale, Denver, and Brown all at home. We'll talk about that next week, and we'll see how the Penn game went. So we got a lot to talk about next week. But for now, good luck at Penn, and thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Jerry.
For Princeton head men's lacrosse coach Matt Madelon, I'm Jerry Price. Thank you for being with us each week on the Princeton LaxCast, and thank you for your continued support of Princeton men's lacrosse.